This is a Bubbly service announcement.
This is Bubble Genius. In lieu of an ad this week, we thought we'd ask a favor of you. If, like us, you're angry that corporations are people and women aren't, you're not a feminist, you're a mensch. This week, we're asking you not to buy our soap. Put your money where our mouths are and donate to Planned Parenthood, someone running for office, or any other person or organization fighting the good fight. We're supporting Planned Parenthood because when we don't have money, they're there for us. And when we do have money, we're there for them. Because they help people, like us, and people like you. So go find someone who needs it and give. Go dirty for a week for Planned Parenthood.
Now, back to our regularly scheduled programming.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Hello, I'm John Hamm. Tonight I'm here to talk to you about a product that doesn't need any glitz or gloss. It's a product that speaks for itself, and I'm proud to endorse it. John Hamm's John Hamm. Hamm you can eat in the bathroom. Let's face it, we live in a fast-paced world. But if you're as busy as I am, every day you have to make a decision. Am I going to eat lunch, or am I going to go to the bathroom? Well, now you never have to make that choice again. Each John Hamm's John Hamm dispenser is located opposite the toilet paper dispenser. You never get confused. And unlike other bathroom ham dispensers, John Hamm's John Hamm has only the finest boar's head oven-roasted ham. That's good ham. So what are you waiting for? Don't find yourself on the toilet craving high-quality ham slices. Tell your boss to order one for the office today. And remember the John Hamm's John Hamm motto. If it feels like a slice of ham, don't wipe your ass with it.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Pleasure is just a click away with radio as your guest. There's no quicker way, so click away. Radio does the rest.
I can get the part from Bristol. It'll take 2 weeks. Here's your pomade.
2 weeks? That don't do me no good.
Here's Ford Auto Man's Bristol.
Hold on now. I don't want this pomade. I want Dapper Dan.
I don't care Dapper Dan. I care Fop.
Well, I don't want Fop, goddammit. I'm a Dapper Dan man.
What's your language, young fella? This is a public market. Now, if you want Dapper Dan, I can order for you. Have it in a couple of weeks.
Well, ain't this place a geographical oddity? 2 weeks from everywhere. Forget it. It doesn't hear that.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Monday, March 26, 2012, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez. We're on. Hello.
I'm here.
Yeah. I can't believe it.
We're in a tight spot.
In a tight spot, that's right. We had serious issues with the show.
As I said on the blog, catastrophic system failure.
It really was. And it was one issue following the next issue, following the next issue, following the next issue. First, we had this ongoing problem where Chez was hearing his own voice on a delay fed back into his headphones.
Mix Plus.
Exactly. And if you've worn headphones ever and talked into a microphone and then you hear your own voice not in real time, it's... you can't concentrate. There's no way you can actually speak. So what we've been doing for the last, I don't know, couple of months is just hoping and praying that it doesn't happen whenever we start the show. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes there's feedback.
I just pull my headphones out when I talk a lot of the time.
So now what you've done is you've shut off your headphones so you can't actually hear your voice at all, which I guess that's the... that's the only solution.
No, because I'm still hearing it a little bit, but it's doable at the moment. I'll survive.
Yeah. Well, what I think you're hearing is I think you're now hearing faintly the sound of your voice played out of my headphones back into my microphone in the back. It doesn't matter. But then, I mean...
That's just crazy.
Yeah, it is. And then the next problem we had is, for some reason, there was a bandwidth issue somewhere along the line where everything was just, I mean, Chez was auto-tuning, because I record the show directly into my computer here. So you hear my voice nice and crisp and clear, but Chez comes in via Skype, And so it's all dependent on bandwidth. And there's any number of areas where things could have gone haywire and blown a gasket along that line. So we had that and that. And then, in order to mitigate both of those problems, I was fiddling around with settings in real time during the show. And as I was doing that, trying to fix both the feedback and the internet problems, it turned out when I listened back to the show, which we finally completed, the free show. Yeah, sort of. When I listened back to the free show, no sound. No sound for Chez at all. Was recorded on the audio. So, you know, even if we did make it through, it sounded like hell as we were doing it. But the end result was there was no sound. So there was nothing that was salvageable from that show, which, okay, fine. But then we didn't. But then we got to the end of the free show. We said there's no way we can do an after party now, which then, you know, for me, I'm a little bit OCD. So I feel like, well, it's Thursday. We've got to do an after party. We've got all kinds of people who have paid to listen to this show. We got to give them a show. So, but there was nothing we could do. There was no way we could possibly ever do a show that was at all entertaining whatsoever.
We should have just pulled like a Wonder Shows and just gone with it. So that giving them like an hour of static and back, you know, feedback and weirdness and
yeah,
and just called it art.
That's right. It would have been, it was kind of like this. When I listened back to the free show, it was like this. It was me talking, sounding exactly like I do right now. And then as soon as I would stop talking and Chez would comment, it was just this. And there was just, it was inaudible. It was
actually, I was screwing with you. I was really talking that way.
Right. But you know, so, our full throated apologies for that because, you know, so now what we're doing is we're here on a Monday doing both of the shows to make up for missing them on Thursday. And what we're going to do is we're going to wheel this show. We're going to wheel the free show out Monday. It'll be late in the evening, East Coast time, that it'll premiere. And then we're going to premiere the after party that was supposed to be for last week. That'll go up tomorrow, Tuesday. And then Thursday, we're going to record both shows as we do always on schedule, God willing. And the free show will be released Thursday night and the after party will go up Fridays from now on. So from this point forward, and this has nothing to do with the technical problems. This is just more a matter of rolling out content. So what we've been doing for so long is, since we started the after party at least, is rolling out both shows at the same time. And I always felt like, well, you know, maybe that's not such a good idea. I mean, it's nice to have them both out as soon as we finish them, but also one show is stepping on the other show and there's no, on the blog, there's no clear distinction. You know, one show doesn't get full marquee at the top of the page. One or the other gets bumped down quickly. So in order to present the content in a more even way, you know, there'll be one show on a Thursday, another show on a Friday. So you get, you know, two weekdays of show out of the 5 weekdays. So I think that's what we're going to be doing from now on. That's it.
I'm all for that. Sounds good. I'm proud to be a part of this plan.
So let's dive into politics. I mean, you know, maybe it was a good thing that we ended up doing the show today instead of last Thursday because I posted a thing on my blog about Sullivan and Greenwald going at it on Real Time with Bill Maher about Anwar al-Awlaki.
Mm-hmm.
This is Greenwald's big pet issue. And
Course it is. That and Bradley Manning.
That's right. And then Bill Maher, knowing this, brought it up. Sullivan and Maher, both in support of the killing, the targeted killing of Anwar al-Awlaki, and naturally Greenwald is against it. I mean, he's for the idea of capturing all enemy combatants and putting them on trial.
So did Greenwald get to be a pissy little pain in the ass on national television?
Well, yeah, but you know, I mean, it's really hard to disagree with Glenn Greenwald because he's really, really smart. Well, I mean.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few people who can make a point as precisely and as fluently as Glenn Greenwald. That's a fact. But naturally, I disagree with him on this and many other issues. So I posted a thing on my blog about Sullivan and Greenwald having this debate, and then I threw in my two cents about, well, you know, for example, if there's If a police officer is confronting a criminal and the criminal draws a gun and aims it at the police officer in a lot of cases is going to shoot that criminal, right? Without any sort of due process. The due process happens in those split seconds. In the case of the American Civil War, you know, half of the country seceded from the Union and took up arms against the United States. Should Lincoln have arrested all of the Confederates and put them on trial? No. He went down and he put down the...
If you're Glenn Greenwald, you know, I'm sure that there was a, you know, ye old Glenn Greenwald during that time who was still residing down in Rio and sending back messages via carrier pigeon.
Yeah. And well, I mean,
what a lousy idea it was to go to war.
Exactly. Well, what ended up happening was Lincoln suspended habeas corpus. Lincoln almost arrested a Supreme Court justice for crying out loud. And he went down and he quelled the rebellion. He took a formed an army and went down and ended up killing 2,500 or 250,000. 2,500. Hell, 250,000 Confederate soldiers.
Oh, well.
And so this is, and so I made that point. Sullivan on Real Time made the point, well, what if it, you know, it, as what happened, this actually happened during World War II. Americans with German descent or sympathizers with the Nazi cause, you know, left America, went and joined up with the Nazi army. Should those Americans have been killed or not, you know?
What was Greenwald's response to that? I honestly haven't seen it. Well, I mean, I see Greenwald and I tune out now.
I didn't even antagonize him on the blog. I mean, or on,
I noticed that.
I mean, on Twitter. I didn't go after him on Twitter. You know, I just let the post speak for itself. But then
don't go after him on Twitter, because then he'll just retweet you to his little acolytes and it'll be the, you know, you'll never hear the end of it.
Oh, that's what he did, though. That's what he did. He must have seen my post and then took and then went after me on Twitter.
There's nothing I hate more than that. More than the, you know, I'm going to retweet you and because, you know, I want everybody to I want everybody to see how dumb you are. And then I don't have to do crap because all my little minions, if I have a bunch of followers, will do it for me. Breitbart used to do that all the time. Greenwald does that. It's really irritating.
Of course. You know, but I mean, what he did it anyway. So he went on Twitter, said to me, "You've embraced the core Bush U terror theory. No rights for accused combatants and the president alone decides. Congrats." That was
You know what?
That was his.
Screw him.
Yeah.
Screw his pious, obnoxious bullshit.
Right. Well, that's. I mean, that's exactly what happened, and there was nothing I could really do about it other than to respond. You know, I'm not going to let something like that fly. I mean, he's not going to go on Twitter and be a D-bag to me and expect to get away with it. So, oh, and then by the way, then someone, one of his followers named PH Press, chimed in and said, "Bob hates our freedom. He'd prefer a totalitarian state with a powerful dictator, the tiny penis syndrome." Well, PH Press, I'll show you mine if you show me yours. And then Greenwald said, "Only when there's a Democrat." So I haven't even responded yet. So Greenwald and this other guy are talking about me on Twitter.
Good.
Greenwald says, "Only when there's a Democrat in office. He'll discover the Constitution again when there's a big, bad Republican."
You know what? Good. This is why I don't listen to anything Greenwald has to say. Really. He is a pissy, condescending. It's just everything he does is just obnoxious as hell. And, you know, for somebody who bitches and moans up a storm about how, you know, sort of selective outrage, it always surprises me that he is so willing to come down on Obama for every little goddamn thing without ever pointing out the fact that, you know, there are quite a few great things that he's done. But that's, you know, I mean, look, it's his business. That's the way he writes. And getting upset about it is not going to do me any good. It's not going to do anybody else any good. He can continue to, you know, write these long didactic essays about his four favorite topics. And I'll just ignore them the way I have for the past several months and will continue to.
Well, you know, I can't do that. I just can't. I can't. I mean, and it's a good debate to have. But I mean, as long as the debate is reasonable. So therefore, my response to Glenn was, sarcastically, I said, "So I've abandoned the Constitution for party politics." And then I said, "This kind of knee-jerk reaction is poisoning the debate, Glenn. Are you with me on the points of the debate? Don't get just knee-jerk into I'm abandoning the Constitution because I'm an Obama bot. That's a bunch of horse ass.
Crap.
Yeah, it really is.
But that's exactly what he's saying. Anybody who appreciates the things that Obama has done. Anybody who thinks that Obama's done a good job and really kind of puts aside the Greenwald's pet grievances, that person has surrendered to the cult of personality and engages in selective outrage and is an Obama bot. And it just gets exhausting. I feel like arguing with him he is one of those people who I feel like arguing with gives him more power. Mm-hmm. And as far as I'm concerned, he's a freaking nobody.
Yeah.
He's a zilch. And I could not care less what the hell he thinks.
Right. Right.
And I think that really in the great scheme of things, I promise you. Yeah. You know what? Marr brought him on. God bless him. But I think really in the great scheme of things, he's a nobody.
Well,
he doesn't freaking matter.
He's got a lot of people. He's got a lot of people who support him and a lot of people who
read
him.
You know what? They have zero influence on what's going on. Because the Democrats don't give a crap about him. The Republicans will never embrace him. Good luck with that.
Here's the rest of the conversation. So Glenn then just responded to me. I said, so I've abandoned the Constitution for party politics, ? This kind of knee-jerk reaction is poisoning the debate, Glenn. And then Glenn responds, I just explained the substance in the last tweet. You've embraced the Bush-U theory. Now that there's a Democrat in office. You know, so basically he's saying, oh, no, he's not being... A Jack Wong on Twitter. He's being reasonable. Yeah, those tweets were totally reasonable.
He's educating you because that's what Glenn Greenwald does. He educates us unwashed.
So I responded, no. I said, Bush, you justified torture, rendition, wiretap, suspension of habeas, etc. All of which I oppose, irrespective of party, which is true. If you look back at the record of what I've written on the Huffington Post and what I've written on the blog, that is absolutely true. I'm opposed to torture, rendition, wiretap, suspension of habeas, all of it. And that was all justified by you and the Bush administration on down the line. Okay? Then Glenn says, hilarious. It's okay to kill accused combatants without judicial review, but not to eavesdrop them on them or detain them without it. Right? So he's trying to peg me as a hypocrite. And then I
Why
said,
"Why are you doing this?"
And then I said, "There's
you're
a
going to get nowhere, man. You're not going to get through to him. But, all you're doing is wasting time. You are not going to get through to Greenwald."
Well, just wait. I said, "There's a clear distinction. Al Awlaki is one instance. Torture, wiretaps, etc., are happening secretly and on a widespread basis." Now, it's important to note here that, for example, I support the killing of Nazis on a battlefield or during a time of war. But I'm opposed to torturing them if they're captured. These are the weird contradictions that we have, not only in war, but also in politics. Some things are justified. Some things are not justified.
Right. Because you embrace reality instead of this bizarre sort of progressive utopian way things ought to be. You know, Glenn is the ultimate when it comes to sort of speaking from the position of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, the view from nowhere, as they say.
Yeah. Well. And, you know, for example, we can say Hiroshima was justified, but then condemned Dresden. I mean, there are all kinds of shades of gray here. And I do make this point,
too.
Not
when you're talking about Greenwald. There are no shades of gray.
So Glenn says, whether you admit it or not, you're arguing Bush-U. This is just him being, you know, Glennzilla, big bad Glennzilla, Terminator, coming after me. Just repeating the same point over and over again. Accused combatants have no rights, and the president alone decides. You know what? I'm going to continue this in a second. We got a break real quick, and we'll come back and I'll talk about this a little more right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Yeah, we're back at the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show, brought to you by Bubble Genius. So just to wrap up this Glenn Greenwald exchange. So, you know, again, it's an important debate to have because this is one of the reasons why we talk about politics in general. It's because nothing is black and white. Nothing is black and white. Especially in war. So, you know, so this is the point that I was attempting to make to Glenn about Anwar al-Awlaki. So he says, whether you admit it or not, you're arguing Bush-U. Accused combatants have no rights and the president alone decides. Well, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying across the board accused combatants have no rights. I'm not saying that. Not saying that for a second. So I said to him on Twitter, No, there are shades of gray here, and you know it. Example, you defended Ron Paul on terrorism, even though he voted for the 2001 authorization for use of military force and introduced H.R. 3076. I'm going to get to that in a second. And then I said, war, like politics, is murky. We can justify Hiroshima but condemn Dresden, praise FDR's liberalism but condemn Japanese internment camps. And then so Glenn is entirely dropped off the planet on this at this point. So, I mean, it was just crickets from him. But then I got from one of his followers named P-O-F-L-I, Pofly. The shades of gray there are Bob's partisan loyalty to Obama. Yeah.
This is the dude.
So, you know,
it's funny. You're talking about this like you're talking about this to me literally like 10 minutes after I finished a piece that'll go up on Banter tomorrow about how much I hate the 140 character back and forth on Twitter. Sort of angry BS from people you don't even know.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I rarely put stuff up on Twitter. It's not that I mind the debate. I just all of a sudden out of nowhere, somebody who sees something you don't like, misunderstands your point or whatever the hell, decides that they're going to take you on.
Yeah.
And yeah, look, it's your decision as to whether or not you want to respond to that or just laugh it off or ignore the hell out of that person who's got, 30 followers.
It's
annoying. It's just obnoxious. You know, whenever I get one of those freaking messages, my phone beeps or it buzzes or whatever. And it just, it's just a pain in the ass.
Well, look, I mean, here's Glenn Greenwald, who is an absolutist on all of this. He's a complete and total pacifist. And these things I can understand. I understand saying across the board, everything that happens in war is wrong. Okay.
Right.
I can get that. I understand that. Then just come out and say it. Just say it, Glenn, please. Please. Because if that's the case, don't wrap your arms around the terrorism national security policies of Ron Paul, or at least the things that he says when he's talking into a microphone. Because what he does behind the scenes is something entirely different, as I made the point I made on Twitter today. Ron Paul not only voted for the piece of legislation, the AUMF, in 2001, right after 9/11, that gave the Bush administration authority to do all of this, okay? The authority to kill members of Al-Qaeda, to capture them, And of course, the Bush administration and their advisors, used the AUMF to justify a lot of other things, like torture and illegal wiretaps and all of it, indefinite detention and whatnot. But Ron Paul voted for that bill. The AUMF. Furthermore, Ron Paul, to make things worse, Ron Paul introduced to the House of Representatives H.R. 3076. It's called the September 11th Marquee and Reprisal Act of 2001. This is Ron Paul's bill. Okay, and I mentioned this before, but it's worth repeating. Here's the text of the bill. To authorize the President of the United States to issue letters of marque and reprisal with respect to certain acts of air piracy upon the United States on September 11, 2001, and other similar acts of war planned for the future. And other similar acts of war planned for the future. The underwear bomber is an example of this. Anwar al-Awlaki was in communication with the underwear bomber. Fact.
No, but no, he wasn't, because that's just, your government lying to you. How can we trust it?
Right.
That's the catch-all. No, really, that's the catch-all
of course
that Greenwald comes back to.
I mean,
nothing reported on by the media, nothing reported on, ever put out there by, and admittedly, the Pentagon has lied to us, but nothing ever said by our government is truthful. Nothing ever reported on is anything other than, sort of slavish stenography. Nothing can be trusted. No one can be trusted except St. Glenn.
Yeah. Well, here's the authority.
He is the last man standing when it comes to moral and ethical integrity in journalism.
This is the authority that the bill granted the president. Now, this bill did not pass. I will note that. But this is an indictment of Ron Paul, Glenn Greenwald's candidate, Ron Paul, at least candidate when it comes to national security and terrorism. Ron Paul. This speaks to Ron Paul's actual, where when Ron Paul puts his money where his mouth is, this is what comes out. President of the United States is authorized and requested to commission, under officially issued letters of marquee and reprisal, so many of privately armed and equipped persons as entities as, in his judgment, the service may require, with suitable instructions to the leaders thereof to employ all means reasonably necessary to seize outside the geographic boundaries of the United States and its territories the person and property of...
And of course, the mailman's here.
Oh, that's okay.
Don't you love that?
That's fine, man.
We're such cheap asses.
Well, we do. Really, you know what? We do the show from our kitchen, so that's what happens.
It's not even my dog. If it were my dog, I could, like, forgive it. But starting next week, I'll be in my own place.
So this is basically – this bill that Ron Paul introduced basically allows the president to hire an army of private bounty hunters and mercenaries to kill Osama bin Laden and anyone associated with Al-Qaeda.
Eric Prince's armed frat boys.
Right. Exactly. And you say, well, all right, look, this doesn't justify – killing them. Well, of course it does. It says right here, item B, the president of the United States is authorized to place a money bounty drawn in at his discretion from the $40 billion appropriated on September 14, 2001 in the Emergency Supplemental Appropriations Act for recovery from and response to terrorist attacks in the United States or from private sources for the capture, alive or dead. Alive or dead is in the Ron Paul bill of Osama bin Laden or any other Al-Qaeda conspirator responsible for the act of air piracy upon the United States on September 11th, 2001, under the authority of any letter of marquee or reprisal issued under this act. That's no, it. I mean, it's just,
you know, you hit it on the head. You proved the sort of Greenwaldian hypocrisy.
Exactly. Well, this
yeah,
I
no,
mean,
absolutely.
Well, this is, I mean, this is not just the hypocrisy.
But he'll never admit to it. He'll find some very sort of, you know, highly articulate, high-minded way of saying that that's nonsense.
Well, you know,
that, a way to refute the idea that sort of what you said just proved, which is that every single person at some point has to make concessions. There are things in politics, like you said, murky, that you have to overlook. You have to be able to get beyond the things you don't like and support the imperfect. And Glenn pretends to not be willing to do that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That everything has to be flawless. And, you know, I can only imagine how disappointed Greenwald is in his daily life. You know, like the coffee they gave me at Starbucks. Oh, my God, there's some excess sweetener in it. I can't have that.
Exactly.
I want it without that.
Well, look, you know, I wasn't intending to illustrate
the has FM, but not AM radio. I don't like AM.
Well, you know, I wasn't intending to illustrate him as being a hypocrite or anything like that. All I was intending to do here was to illustrate that that war and politics are shades of gray. There are contradictions inherent to everything. OK, and that goes for Glenn or me or you or whoever, you know, it's okay to kill Nazis, but it's not okay to torture them. How is that? It's okay to keep them alive but make them suffer great pain. It's not okay to do that, but it's okay to kill them. How is that? Yeah, it's a contradiction. It's while they're alive, we don't want to make their lives painful and miserable. But if they're on the battlefield aiming to kill us, then we can shoot them.
It's, you know, it's the F. Scott Fitzgerald quote, you know, the test of a first-rate intellect is the ability to hold two opposing thoughts in mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. And yet Glenn, for all of his supposed first-rate intellect, cannot handle those contradictions.
Right.
It does not compute. And the nomad robot starts smoking and bouncing off the walls. Must sterilize.
Exactly. Quick break. We'll be back right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Yeah, we keep saying that, and it's true. It's the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show, brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. It's the best damn soap in the world. Here are the ladies from Bubble Genius urging you to, surprisingly, not buy any soap this week.
This is a bubbly service announcement.
This is Bubble Genius. In lieu of an ad this week, we thought we'd ask a favor of you. If, like us, you're angry that corporations are people and women aren't, you're not a feminist, you're a mensch. This week, we're asking you not to buy our soap. Put your money where our mouths are and donate to Planned Parenthood, someone running for office, or any other person or organization fighting the good fight. We're supporting Planned Parenthood because when we don't have money, they're there for us. And when we do have money, we're there for them. Because they help people, like us, and people like you. So go find someone who needs it and give. Go dirty for a week for Planned Parenthood.
Now, back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Yeah, this week, you'll be able to shove us in your pants several times because we're doing a number of different shows. Make sure to enter your promo code Bob and Chez, B-O-B-A-N-D-C-H-E-Z, and get 15% off your entire order from bubblegenius.com. Oh, by the way, they've got the new, I'm sure you saw this, Chez. They've got their new hibiscus soap, which I love. And in fact, they've named it Bob's favorite hibiscus soap.
I heard you mentioned that in the failed podcast last week.
Yeah.
That they have now created Bob's hibiscus soap.
I love it. I love this soap.
I think you should send a giant gift basket of it to Greenwald down in Rio. He'd appreciate that.
Yeah, maybe I will, you know? I mean,
and tell him oh my God, tell him shove Bob and Chez into your pants, Glenn.
Well, you know, look, I mean, I have to say this every single time, but you know, I've had email exchanges with Glenn and we get along. I mean, we actually have a cordial communication outside of debating these issues. So anyway, you know, there's other real stuff that's happened in the news this weekend and today, and so we might as well get to that. You know, we could talk about this all during the course of the entire show. But yeah, I mean, if you go look up Ron Paul's HR 3076, you'll be surprised, especially if you're a Ron Paul supporter who believes that he's a saint when it comes to the war on terror. Just read it. It's fact right there. He's calling for private mercenaries hired by the president to just indiscriminately kill members of Al-Qaeda. And then get back to me, please. So healthcare reform is being decided in the Supreme Court, the future of the Obamacare Affordable Care Act is in the Supreme Court right now. They're expecting, I think, the expectation is that they're suddenly going to rule this week. Now, it's not going to be till June. They're just hearing arguments right now. They're not going to levy any sort of decision, hand down any sort of decision until June. But, you know, the big deal is that, you know, there's a chance they could overturn the individual mandate. I don't think they will. Because the individual mandate is, as we've talked about in the past, it's just a tax. And in fact, you don't even really have to pay the tax. But if you've been curious, Here's exactly how the individual mandate will work, according to Ezra Klein. And, well, I should say before I dive into this, you know why the individual mandate is important. It's because if we're going to cover everybody, you can't just have people deciding only to get insurance as soon as they get sick, and then as soon as they feel better, to drop the insurance. That would send costs skyrocketing because, you know, they're not paying into the insurance pool on an ongoing basis, which then gets spread around, redistributed, if you will, to everyone who gets sick and who needs it for health coverage. So,
commie.
Yeah, right. Most people, according to Glenn Greenwald, Ezra Klein, will never notice the mandate as they get insurance through their employer, and that's good enough for the government. But those who aren't exempt and aren't insured, the choice will be this: purchase insurance or pay a small fine. In 2016, the first year the fine is fully in place, the fine will be $695 a year, or 2.5% of income, whichever is higher. That makes the mandate progressive, like a progressive tax. And what happens if you don't buy insurance and you don't pay the penalty? Well, not much. The law specifically says that no criminal action or liens can be imposed on people who don't pay the fine. If this actually If this actually leads to a world in which large numbers of people don't buy insurance and tell the IRS to stuff it, you could see that change. But for now, the penalties are low and the enforcement is non-existent. So look, if you're not insured through your employer or you're not buying it yourself, you should probably buy it. This is part of being a good citizen. It's part of paying into the system. It's part of making keeping costs lower. You will benefit, I assure you, in the long run by, you know, playing ball, by not trying to skirt around it. But if you run into some sort of financial feedback loop, you're low on cash, you're self-employed like me and Chez, and things are slow, you know, and you can't afford to buy insurance, and you're just really stuck in a bind. There's just no way you can do it. Well, you're not gonna get thrown in jail. The IRS isn't gonna put liens on your property. They're not gonna levy your paychecks. They're not gonna do all those scary IRS things. There's simply no enforcement mechanism for it. So this very scary evil thing called the individual mandate. You know what? At the end of the day, it's not that scary. It's really not. But it's important. It's important to do this. Now, when we were having the healthcare reform debate, I was really one of the staunch believers, and I wrote about this extensively, that if they're going to have an individual mandate, they need to have a public option. Well, look, it didn't happen. So, you know, you look at the rest of the bill, there are a lot of good things in there that we ought to be supporting anyway. So let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Get the bill passed, and then we can work on something by way of an amendment or another piece of legislation that gives us...
Once again, the acceptance of stuff that is not perfect.
Yeah, that's exactly
because
right.
It's got enough good stuff in it that it's worth, you know, implementing, even though it doesn't give you every single thing you want.
That's right. That's right. So all of you who are, you know, really want a public option, or you want Medicare for all, or you want single payer, what are you doing? What are you doing? Call your senator, call your member of the House of Representatives, ask them to sponsor a piece of legislation that says, here's a public option. We're going to tack this on to the Affordable Care Act. Do it. But it's not happening. No one's doing it. No one's saying, here's the public option thing. Let's all fight for this now. Instead, all they're doing is they're just shaking their fist at the Obama administration for selling out the public option and blah, 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 blah. All of these myths that surround that. I don't get it. I just think sometimes people are just looking for things to complain for. Another quick break. Last break of the show. Back after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
It's one of those songs here, Chez, that I could just let it play the whole, on endless loop for the rest of the show. You know?
It's a great song. A truly great song.
It's one of the all-time great songs, I think, and music videos to boot.
It's a beautiful video, but it's... I remember, first time I heard it, it has that little piano intro. You know, it was right after... Simon's Dream was huge, and then Melancholy came out and it had that little piano intro, and then that. And that was the first thing you heard, and it was just this beautiful, soaring, anthemic. It was absolutely amazing stuff. It's a great record all the way around, but that song is spectacular.
Yeah, it really just blows you away. I mean, you just can't beat that. It's got that majestic, epic feel at the beginning of the show. It really kicked off in an amazing way, what turned out to be, you know, one of the groundbreaking double albums of our time. Last Friday, not this past Friday, but the Friday before, Alexandra Pelosi premiered a second documentary video on Real Time with Bill Maher. And it was in response to her other video, which we played on the show, that she went to Mississippi and we're talking to country fried rubes in Mississippi about their views with regards to President Obama and health care reform and so on. And they...
And fire and electronics and anything from the 18th century.
Yeah, yeah. And then so they responded in the typical fashion. You know, I don't support Obama because his name is Obama and he's a half breed. And
put Jesus in charge and everything will be OK.
That's right. And so, you know, I thought and I guess mistakenly so, that the whole point of that video was not to make fun of people who live in Mississippi, but again, to illustrate the contradictions of people who live there, who, strangely enough, you know, vote conservative. It's the most conservative state in the union, but it's also the poorest state. And so here's Alexandra Pelosi. She goes down there and makes a documentary illustrating this major, major contradiction. the point of the video is proven by the polling that, that Bill Maher later presented on the show from PPP, you know, basically backing up everything that Alexandra Pelosi discovered in this video. You know, people in Mississippi think Obama's a Muslim and blah, 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 on down the line. So, but then she really screwed it up. I guess in response to all of the backlash, like she's just picking on the right, she released a video the following week on Real Time where she went to New York. And she went to not just talking to liberals in New York, which would have been, to me, the appropriate thing to do. Find some liberals and illustrate their contradictions. Maybe some liberals who support Ron Paul. You know, like, Ron, why would you support Ron Paul? He's against X, Y, and Z, which you clearly support. Well, and that would have been the response.
Freedom.
Then, exactly. Then you have a one-to-one.
The underwear. You get the underwear gnomes.
You get the underwear gnomes. But she didn't do that. Instead, she went and found several black guys outside of a welfare office in Manhattan. A couple of the guys, let's say at least one of the guys was drunk. And basically standing there saying into the camera that they're there for their to pick up their free check, their free Obama money. All they want is their check. And, well, why do you support Obama? Well, he gives us free things. He gives us checks.
That's ugly.
And what she ended up doing is she didn't end up illustrating any contradictions. These guys are supporting Obama because they know where they're getting their money. That was the point in the video. That was the illustration of the video. But what she ended up doing was kind of highlighting the conservative Republican stereotype of black people, like these black people as these welfare queens just waiting for their free handout, these lazy,
right,
shiftless.
You know, conversely, though, the argument can be made that the week before she had been highlighting the negative stereotype of, you know, the hillbilly down in Mississippi. And, you know, it comes back to two wrongs don't make a right.
And you decide for yourself. If you haven't seen it yet, here's Alexandra Pelosi in Manhattan talking to several people outside the welfare office.
Hey, Bill, I'm here in New York. This is where I live, across from the welfare office. Meet Joe, the doorman.
16 years I've been working at this address, and for 16 years people are walking by this building with a white piece of paper in their hand, looking perplexed, and they come up freely and they say, I'm looking for the welfare office, or I'm looking for social services, or I'm looking for food stamps. I see that most of them are able-bodied. They don't look like they're handicapped in any way. They just look like they don't want to work, and it's really, really hard to look at this and say, I come to work every day, why can't you?
I'm here trying to get some Obama bucks. That's what I'm doing, trying to get some Obama money.
I am here to get some benefits, you know what I mean? I'm here to get a check. Bitch, I want a check.
Tell me why you like Obama.
Because he gives me stuff.
Who are you going to vote for in this election?
Obama.
Why?
Because he's black.
So what do you get from the government? Tell me everything you get from the government.
All I get, stamps, public assistance, Medicaid. We call it money in the pound. We call it money in the pound.
What kind of benefits are you getting?
Let's see. Whatever the hell they got to offer, like, I don't even know. It ain't like they got a checklist, like, nigga, we go off this, this, and that. I'm just here to get what I can get.
Food stamps. It's just food. It's like food.
When was the last time you actually worked?
I would say about half a decade.
But you're a perfectly healthy young man. Why aren't you working right now?
Because my background. Once you go to jail, it's hard to get a job.
Why should I help you? Why should my tax dollars be going to you?
Only because my ancestors came here and helped build this place.
What do you mean?
My ancestors. The slaves.
How many kids do you have?
I have 5.
How many mothers?
4 baby mamas.
4 baby mamas? Do you really want to work, or you just want to get a free check?
I just want to get a free check.
There's a sign behind you that says Waverly Job Center. You have any intention of going in to get a job, or are you just going to get the food stamps?
Not looking for a job. Maybe a career, but not a job. How you doing? You looking good today?
Looks like all you're looking for is a date.
Oh, God.
That's who. Single. Ready to mingle.
Yeah, that's right. All of this is just so feeding into this, you know, 200-year-old.
She did go out and get people saying this, and that's incredibly damning stuff. It may be feeding a Republican meme or even a stereotype, but, you know, she fed the opposite stereotype the week before. You know, yeah. The argument has to be made whether either of the reports was fair, because really there's a small slice of people. You know, it's not obviously not indicative, I don't think, of the entire population. But yeah, I mean, look, that's still damning stuff. You know, it pisses me off to listen to it.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's always uncomfortable to hear people who
very cavalier, but, you know, taking out tax money. I'm progressive, but yeah, that'll infuriate me. Come on.
Well, but it's not indicative of a broader issue. You know, to me, I mean, you can always cherry pick people who are going to piss you off.
Yeah, but you're basically, you're now sitting there saying that you're making the same argument that you could have very easily made, you know, a week ago when we did the podcast about the people in Mississippi. You know, I mean, neither was technically fair.
Well, no, what I said, I mean, the preface to the Mississippi thing was that it's indicative of the polling. It's the Republicans tend to vote against their own economic best interest. You're talking about middle class, you're talking about working class Republicans voting Republican. And what they're doing is they're voting against policies that will help them. It will help them get health care and help them get a job.
Argument, and I'm playing devil's advocate here. The Republican argument is that I don't want to pay more taxes, put more money into the system, because there are people out there who are just taking and taking and taking from it, and have no intention of working or contributing anything to society. And I don't want to feed that. It's, you know, it's money I make, and it's my right not to have to feed that. Now, where the hypocrisy comes in, of course, is that, you know, if you're an older white person who ain't doing crap and you're collecting off the state, somehow that's all right. You know, somehow you deserve it. It's the quote unquote welfare queens. It's the black and the brown folks. They're the ones who do nothing and don't deserve crap. So, I mean, that to me, I think, is actually the better story. You know, what each side of the political aisle is willing to put up with. Who is all right to take money from the state and who isn't, in the eyes of, you know, depending on which side of the political aisle you're from. But look, you know, like I said, it's what she did there was basically the exact same in my eyes that she did the week before, only from the other side. And I actually thought it was, you know,
I mean, how do you possibly see a one-to-one comparison between those two things, where one is borne out in polling? I mean, every poll is taken of conservative voters. They're voting against their economic best interest. They're saying things like, Obama's a Muslim. They're saying things like, you know.
Oh, I agree. That's nonsense. Of course that's nonsense.
So how is that related in the other documentary? Are we seeing scores and scores of New York black people going up, lining up for welfare checks because they don't want to work? I don't see that anywhere in the polling. In fact, what I see is more white people than black people on food stamps. One.
That's probably,
two,
no,
I see.
That's
probably, I see.
That's, no, I agree with you.
I see several black people waiting outside the welfare office. Whether they actually went inside and received a quote unquote check, that's another story entirely. And that was not clarified in the video. So that's not even, we don't even know if they actually received checks. They're just standing out there. One guy's drinking a beer, the other guy's smoking a cigarette, and the other guy's hitting on passersby.
You know, so you felt that she fed a stereotype simply as a sort of backlash from the week before, from what she was accused of, but not what she was actually doing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. She thought she was presenting the equal and opposite side of the story.
No, I mean, I see what you're, you know, I see what your argument is, that there's firm polling
for the Mississippi interviews, and there really isn't firm polling for, I mean, and there may be, by the way, we just may not know about it. I mean, I'm not, you know, once I'm just sort of playing devil's advocate here, because after listening to both of them, I see where each side would be pissed. Each side would look at it and say, that's not a statistically significant sample, and it's a very unfair sample. That's all.
Yeah.
That's my argument.
Well, yeah, but the argument on the one side, the Mississippi video, in favor of the Mississippi video, is that, and I repeat, you can point to any number of polls that show, if not a majority, at least a plurality of conservative Southern voters voting against their economic best interest, saying cockamamie things like they don't like evolution doesn't exist, or that that the president's a Muslim, or they're not going to support anyone that says, you know, that has the middle name Hussein, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you're not going to find any polling that supports black people being these lazy, shiftless welfare queens.
Just, I agree with that.
Refusing to work and just lining up at the welfare office and drinking beer. It just it doesn't happen. It's just not true.
I agree with that.
So therefore,
and I also think that depending on where you live, you'll see just as many white people doing the exact same thing. Absolutely. And like I said, what it comes down to is who the Republicans believe is okay to be doing that as opposed to who is not. You know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Yeah.
If your skin is dark, then you're lazy and shiftless and, you know, and you're not willing to work and you're a welfare queen. If you're white, well, you kind of earned it, you know, and you're down on your luck and you're between jobs and whatever other kind of, you know, horseshit excuse you can make.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, we're not going to solve the problem now, but I mean, I think when it comes to backlash and responding to things that you've said, you know, stand your ground. Stand your ground. Alexander Pelosi, stand your ground. You made an interesting 7-minute video for a comedy show that, you know, certainly it didn't represent every single member and demographic of Mississippi residents.
No, but that is what it looked like. It looked like they were no matter how much Marr, you know, and I love Marr, but, you know, let's face it, he's, you know, nobody does the smarmy liberal, you know, crap head like Marr. You know, preaching from on high from the Hollywood Hills where he smokes pot. But it looked like no matter how much he said, we just got off the plane and met these people. It looked like they went down there to basically, you know, hillbilly punch to go making fun of them. And it's easy. And I laughed at it because, you know, I laugh at those kinds of people.
Yeah.
But then again, I laugh at everybody. So.
Right.
And, it seems like this was another example of it. But I do get your argument, and I see, you know, I see what you're saying, that there's polling to back it up and that this seems more unfair. But it, I don't know. Part of it doesn't seem all that unfair to me. I don't know.
Well, look, I mean, because we've sort of been fed this meme for so many years. I mean, whether it was, Reagan made it popular with the term welfare queens.
He actually
said that. But this idea of blacks as just wanting to, you know, just lay around and be lazy and you know, suck off the government teeth is just
right. No, I think that's nonsense.
It is absolutely nonsense. And
yeah,
that's what Nancy Pelosi. That's what Alexandra Pelosi, even though she is Nancy Pelosi's daughter. That's the concept that she ended up presenting, and it's entirely inaccurate. You know, there were no contradictions there. There was no relationship whatsoever to any sort of plurality of poll numbers.
There was no context.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I get what you're saying. I understand, man. But the argument from the other side will be, you know, look, there was no context for the Mississippi interviews. You know, you know, they just came down here and basically picked on everybody. They only have, you know, they happen to have something behind it that said that Mississippi's the poorest country in the union. And, you know, yeah, that the conclusion that we jump to is that they're voting against their own economic self-interest.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, all I'm saying here is just, we don't have to somehow, if we make a remark or write something or say something that indicts the other side, we don't have to turn around and indict ourselves too in the process. And especially not when
tweet
it's...
tweet that to Greenwald. See what he says. See what his take on it is.
Well, look, I mean, you either believe in what you're saying or you don't. You know, say, okay, well, look, I made fun of Mississippi people. Now I'm going to make fun of New York people as if people lining up for welfare and voting for Obama because of it is representative of New York people. And there's no polling that suggests that whatsoever. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. See you next time, Jess.
See ya.
Okay.